Welcome to the most electrifying show where we discuss all topics related to high voltage. Let's go. Welcome back, everybody. Let's see, we're mid-April, man. We're April 21st. Already. How you been, Paul?
Been doing good.
Man,
doing
I'm good. Glad you keep coming back.
Yep, I've enjoyed it. I hope everybody else has enjoyed me being here, but I know I'm definitely enjoying being here.
Appreciate it, man. Anything important going on?
No, right now, just kind of, you know, in that transition from getting out of the spring, getting into the little warmer weather and stuff.
For us.
Yeah,
now,
for us.
Now
yeah.
We got listeners like exactly. Krista in Buffalo, and yeah. She's still scraping ice exactly. Probably. But
sorry about that. But, just kind of transitioning, and right now everything's been kind of low-key level and doing good.
Yeah, I know for me, we're in the heart of turkey season, man.
Yes.
So that's where it's at, right?
That's always exciting.
You got to decide if you work to live or live to work.
That's it.
Right now I'm working so I can turkey hunt.
There you go.
Well, good, man. I'm glad you're back. Let's see. As we alluded to 2 weeks ago when we had Joey on with the Live Line Bear Hand,
yes,
he decided the next show was going to be on grounding. Another great topic, in my opinion, is something that we do very frequently, and it's something that's somewhat important.
Very important.
So, with that said, again, I'm just trying to tie up loose ends real quick. If y'all haven't already heard or haven't already checked it out, check out the linebrotherskeeper.org with Zach and Melinda with their foundation and organization with what they have going on. It's a great organization. Last time Joey was on, he decided to forfeit his care package, which he already has one from being on the show last year, but we made a donation in his name.
Yes.
So now he's in the running. But again, y'all do us a favor, check out that organization. I know I push him a lot. I don't get paid for it. Paul, have you got paid for it?
Not yet.
We ain't going to.
Yeah.
It's a nonprofit. They do great, great work. If you haven't already heard their show, y'all go back to mid-February and you will see that show. And again, they do really good work. And that's really the important thing. All right. Other than that, you ready to bring in Joey?
Let's bring him on.
Let's do it. All right, Joey, again, 2 weeks ago we had you with Live Line Bear Hand, and you're back with us. I know, again, real quick, BannermanTraining.com. Again, you own Bannerman Training and Consulting, and I know this week you wanted to come on and discuss grounding, protective grounding. Again, thanks for coming back, man.
Yep. Welcome back, Joey.
Well, thank you guys for having me back. Appreciate it.
Yes, sir. So I'm excited, man. What do you have for me for grounding, and where do you want to start? And as always, the questions will go from there.
I'll tell you what, let's kind of start out in the substation as far as the grid goes and how the grid tying to the equipment can actually be a good thing or a bad thing.
Okay.
Not been that long ago, down south, there was an incident that included a fatality of a man in a man lift. They had built some addition to a substation that was existing, and for some reason, they had not tied the two grids together. Mm. And the guy that was going to be in the man lift was going up. It was a lattice structure. He'd do some work. And while he was up, he was going to have to move the man lift around. So he decided he didn't want his ground to be where he would run over it. So unknowingly, he attached the man lift to one grid, and the structure he was working on was actually tied to the grid where the two hadn't been tied together. So he went up, and when he made contact deal, he became current path. He basically was tying the two grids together, and nobody knew anything was wrong until he collapsed in the basket. And when they got him down, he was dead.
So he grounded to one potential and then was working on a different grounded potential. And so he was actually working at a difference of potential, like you say, and he bridged the gap. He became the fuse is what he did.
He was the link.
Wow.
He was the link between the two grids.
Yeah. And maybe you're going to get to it, but was he aware, or was the crew or even the utility aware that those two were at different grounding potentials and knew that they weren't tied together, or what?
Not to my knowledge.
Oh, so this was a trap that no one was even aware of.
Yes.
Okay.
Because in reality, when they installed the new ground grid to the greenfield side, at that point, they should have actually tied the ground grid to the brownfield side, right?
That's correct.
Yeah.
But they failed to do that.
They failed to do that.
Man, and you know, and I'm sure most utilities do this. I know when I came up, if we were going to tie two grids like that, we actually had to do it with a work stick. Or I shouldn't say work stick, a hot stick, right? A shotgun.
Shotgun and ground.
That's correct. And we actually had to make that connection so that you weren't that fuse.
Link, yes.
Yeah, you weren't that fuse or that link making that initial connection.
So a question though, Joey, was it not engineered that way, or was it just something that was overlooked?
That part, I'm not sure. I feel like if the company that was doing the work, I feel like that if they actually had a drawing that showed the grid being tied together, they would have had the grids together.
Right.
And two, one thing that we do a lot is we have, you know, pre-cons where, you know, everything's been developed, everything has kind of been drawn out, and then we actually have a pre-con away ahead of time before execution ever starts. And parts of that would be covered in that pre-con is like, you know, hey, we're going to actually be building a new grid, and we got to make sure, you know, that we tie this new grid to the old grid and so on and so forth. So I don't know. It just sounds like maybe there was just a lot of steps that were missed or overlooked.
Right. And just to clarify for the listeners, because again, we're going to use jargon and terminology. So when Paul says pre-con, because I know the utility that you work for, that indicates a pre-construction meeting.
Yes.
Yeah. Because if people listening to haven't heard that jargon, that terminology.
Yes. Yep.
But yeah, I just want to clarify, pre-construction meeting. So what that would be is what, Paul, like, let's say me as a contractor, if my company won a bid to do a project, y'all are going to invite us out to the pre-con, what, 3, 4, 5 weeks before we move in?
Usually, yes.
There you go.
It's a time frame before you ever even move in, and it's a layout of like, okay, this is the job, this is what we need done, any special notes, any assumptions, anything like that that needs to be brought to their attention, and then normally, you know, they're making notes or they're putting stuff on drawings, and so when they go into it, they go into it hopefully
not blind,
full knowledge.
Yeah, they're not walking day one
exactly full blind. Knowledge of what's going on.
But yeah, I know we're getting away from the grounding, but I just wanted to clarify when you bring up pre-con, what's your meaning by that. But anyhow, sorry Joey, go ahead, man.
That's all right. But you know, the ground grid can actually be a pretty dangerous thing, and we don't, you know, a lot of people don't think about it because you're touching all the equipment that's tied to the grid and everything's fine.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I hate to ruin your train of thought, but while I have mine, which is rare, I'll tell you the first time that resonated with me, it must have been my first or second week of employment. And again, even coming into the substation department, the utility I work for sent me to a 2-week basic training, which honestly was catered to distribution. It really was. I mean, because, hey, 80% of the workforce is distribution. And so we didn't have our own, like, onboarding basic training program, right? Being in transmission and specifically substation. And so at that facility, I was looking at, you know, this is just basic distribution overhead stuff. And the down guys, I noticed that they had a pole or two with, like, let's say, you know, 2 or 3 down guys, right?
Yep.
And I noticed there was a little, like, aluminum jumper from down guy to down guy to down guy.
Yep.
And so I asked the instructor, I said, why are those, of course, I didn't know the terminology at the time, but they're basically bonded. Why are you bonding those 3 down guys? Because, you know, they're all just a screw anchor, you know, a helical into the ground, into the earth. And he said, that's why. He said, because each one of those could technically be at a difference of potential of ground.
Yeah.
If one of those is in really good soil or deeper, whatever, you know.
Resistance.
Exactly. You know, whatever crazy things could, in theory, be there, is they want those the same because those down guys are so close to each other. You could, in theory, walk up and grab one and then the other. And again, you're bridging that gap. You're the link. You're the fuse.
Kind of.
And that was the first time that really struck with me, like, holy crap. Even though this is in the ground, there could be a difference of potential.
And that's where you're getting your step potential.
That's right. But yeah, that was the first time that, though, in my head, right, that ever clicked. Like, wow, I think if it's in the ground, it's good. It's all the same. It ain't.
No.
Anyhow, sorry again, Joey.
That's okay. That's all right. Yeah. But, you know, everybody thinks that there are a lot of things that are safe that can actually be very, very deadly. You know, it's like we talked about in the bare hand segment that we did a couple weeks ago. Staying at that one potential is what you have to do. The voltage isn't what causes the problem, is the current.
Yep.
And that respect, going back to that respect, that, you know, the ground grid, you got to respect it just as much as, you know, the live line conductor. I mean, it's just, even with us, you know, we have a big thing right now with us that even pulling up to the substation to the gate, I mean, we have bonding straps on the gate, you know, mm-hmm. going down to that ground grid. And, you know, each time we go up to a gate, we are supposed to go and look and verify that those grounding straps are attached to the gate, because you don't want to be at that different potential. potential. And there again, a lot of people think, well, that's silly. That, you know what? No, that's respect. That's what that is. You're respecting every aspect of the industry, you know, and it's kind of hard to put in there, well, this is little and that's big. No, it's all one size no matter what.
Right.
And we've got to do a better job of educating some of the newer guys that are coming in and even some of the older guys, because, you know, they really hadn't thought about it that hard. But, you know, especially when you're actually using a ground tail or something, that you're actually attaching your protective grounds, that you're hanging grounds on the bus or whatever, you know, I mean, nobody thinks anything about that ground that's tied into the ground grid as being anything that can cause a problem, but it can be deadly. Yeah, I know that the industry in this country anyway, a big issue with copper thefts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've seen a lot of that.
Yeah, and when I teach the class, I've got a little presentation where the electricians were going in doing their monthly round. They ended up finding a guy that had been cooked that was in a substation stealing grounds, stealing copper.
Yeah, and a lot of it today, they're risking their lives over copper clad. That's not worth anything anyway. So
yeah, but this guy, he stayed on it long enough that he basically took one leg and one arm off.
Mm. Well, he won't do that again.
No, and it, you know, but it's just a dangerous world that we're in. It's once we go inside that substation fence, especially.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's enough on the grid, I guess. But the other thing that we talked about just a little while ago was, you know, staying at the same potential. And a lot of people don't understand the whole concept of what the equipotential part means. You know, there's a lot of different theories about how work between grounds. How far can my grounds be from where I'm working? You know, those kind of, and when I was coming up, which that was years and years ago, we would hang a set of grounds if we had a transmission line that went out at one road, and we'd ride around to the next road and hang another set of grounds, and then we didn't even have any idea of the concept of using an equipotential ground. Mm-hmm. And you know, the further apart you have your grounds, the more circulating currents that you have that's actually flowing through your grounds and through the conductor. You know, it's just making a big loop, and that's putting yourself in a very dangerous situation if you do have to open up anything. You know, open up a jumper, if you're cutting wire, whatever you're doing, it's a really bad place to be.
So how about this? I'll put myself out there. Tell me where my mentality is wrong. So how about this? Let me draw an example and you tell me if I'm correct or not. So when I think of equipotential, and in particular, let's say transmission line, right? Now, equipotential requires me, I don't have to work between grounds. If what I've been taught is true, or if I even remember it appropriately, because we can bracket ground, which is what I would call working between grounds. But when I think equipotential, Joey, I'm going to hang, let's say, and again, we're talking transmission lines, so overhead static, right? So from my static down to my top phase, down to my middle phase, down to my bottom phase. And then I'm also going to loop one from that bottom phase in this daisy chain that I'm figuratively drawing here to my pole. And then that puts my pole that I'm on at the same potential as the three conductors in which I may be working on. Now, is that a correct or safe way to work that pole or no?
Yeah, and there are a lot of companies now that are, a lot of people call it single point grounding.
Yep.
That gets a little bit misconstrued because everybody's thinking that that's just one ground. So what the term that a lot of people are using for that type of grounding is work site grounding.
Okay. So by that though, here's, again, this is why we do this so we can learn. When I think single point, I think phase to ground, where in that example I drew, I daisy chained from ground to phase, phase to phase, phase to phase. Is that what you're referencing?
Yeah. When you're going from your phase to ground, there's a few things that you have that you need to keep into consideration. One is, am I grounding to a lattice tower?
Mm-hmm.
If I'm grounding to a lattice tower and my ground wire is not run all the way to the top, then everywhere that there's a plate that is in that leg of the tower, you have to jumper that out ground.
Oh, so I can't ground through the bolted connections?
No.
So I would have the jumper. Man, and on a lattice tower, that could be hundreds of connections.
Yeah. So,
what
a lot of people have gotten away with is they would go from the conductor to the arm where they were working. And if the line did by some chance come hot, the arm that he's working on and is in close proximity to would be at the same potential conductor that he's working on. So that gives you your potential there. But as far as your relay time, you're not going to have it. You know, the best and fastest relay times that you're going to have is going to be when you go face to face.
Right.
And instead of face to ground. And the other thing that it does is if it's really key to protect the guys that are working in the air.
Right.
It's hard to keep the guys safe that are from that touch and step potential that mm-hmm. are working on. So when you do, if you have the closer to balance three phase fault you have, the least amount of ground current. So that is actually helping protect the guys on the ground better than if I go face to ground, face to ground, face to ground.
Right. And it's going to trip faster based on relays with face to face.
Correct. The other thing that that you deal with is where you do make your ground connection. If you're tying two or three grounds to the same ground wire, you basically have fuses in between your ground connect and they can blow out.
Right.
They're just like a big fuse. But the hardest thing for guys to understand is really that whole exponential concept. You know, it's where do I install the ground? How do I attack ground? And it's like you said, basically, you want that structure to be at the same potential as the line that you're working on.
Right.
And it doesn't necessarily have to be one that one term for it that a lot of people use is a personal ground.
Yep. Mm-hmm. That's what I was always told.
Yeah, they're going to take their personal ground with them. So in the scenario that you think where you're coming from your static down face-to-face, face-to-face, back to your structure, a lot of people have in their mind that I have to take personal ground. And if I'm working on the A phase, if I'm working on B phase, I have B phase. But since I've daisy chained, I really don't, those phases aren't the same anymore.
Right.
You know? So, you know, on a grounding simulator, you can actually keep the lineman safe with just one ground.
So
you know, if I'm working on A phase, and if I go from A phase to the structure below my feet, and I'm working from the structure, then if A phase comes hot, the structure's at the same potential as A phase.
Right.
And I'm touching A phase, so I'm at the same potential. So it's basically what you're doing is you're kind of changing that whole equipotential, staying at the same potential as what you're touching. You're kind of changing it around a little bit because of the way it's actually grounded.
Yeah, and at least, again, from my remembering an experience when they came out with this personal ground, I don't remember when the utility I was working for started that. I would guess it's been 10-12 years ago. If I recall right, that was only if we got so far from our ground. So like if we got outside of 25 or 50 feet or whatever, that at that point I would have to take a personal ground that was, you know, right there with me. That way I wasn't 50 feet from my protective grounds. Is there any validity to that as far as how you utilize it?
You really need to have one tied in, whether you're 20 feet or 50 feet, because you got, if I've got set bracket grounds up and I'm between the grounds, the closer together they are, the lower the amount of circulating current,
mm-hmm.
but you still have the circulating currents that you're dealing with.
Right.
And if you're working on A phase and not tied to the structure that you're working on, when everything comes hot, it's going to come hot too.
Right.
Yeah. I think the one was, so you were in between grounds, but you were in a span with those grounds separated by 100 feet. I think they wanted that one personal ground like within 10 feet of your working application.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. I believe that's the way.
You know, the best way to look at it, you want that structure be at the same potential as what you're touching. Yeah, basically what you have to keep in mind is I need to have a ground that is going from the face to the structure that I'm standing on or working from, so that structure, if the line does come hot, that structure will actually be at the same potential as what I'm working on. So if I've got bracket grounds that are hung 10 feet away and I don't tie the structure to it, then when the line comes hot, I'm the path to the structure.
Right.
So
would I be wrong in assuming, and this is just kind of thinking out of the box here a little bit. So 2 weeks ago, we were talking about the live line bare hand and where we were, you know, going through all the tests and all the everything to make sure that we were going to keep ourselves in the same potential.
That was a Von meter.
Von meter. Yeah. There you go.
Learning.
So we're keeping ourselves, the importance of keeping ourselves within the same potential while doing the live line bare hand. Now, in contrast, we're working de-energized, but technically the same concept is there that, yeah, it's de-energized and we're working, but we still need to protect ourselves in the same potential just in case.
That's correct.
Yes. Okay.
Yes. So, and, you know, and if you think about it, when I came up, like I said, we would ground. Sometimes we'd be grounding. You couldn't even see the grounds that you had hung.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
And the thing that kept us alive then is the fact that it was really the switching procedure. Nobody ever got plugged in on.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, the line never came hot. But where you see the fatalities and this, there's a very large number of fatalities that the IBEW reports every year from improper grounding. And the majority of it has to do with the not having them installed right, not having an equipotential ground, you know, not cleaning the conductor first and doing everything that we do to try to get a good connection. But when the line did come hot, the person was not in that equipotential zone. And that all OSHA says you have to do is basically work in a zone of equalized potential.
Referring back to what you just said, you know, and I can remember them old days, you know, where, you know, you got a stretch and your grounds may be a mile apart, but two, and as long as the switch didn't close, you were all right. But in our industry with the growth and the load, now we've got a lot of crossovers, lines crossing lines. We've got a lot of double circuits.
Yep.
So the potential of a switch, the red tag being taken off and thrown back in, that was very low, right?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
But now with your crossover lines, your double circuits, you know, you never know, car versus pole, they slap the double circuits together. I mean, there's so many more things in the equation today that there again, and I'm going to go back to it. I don't hate going back to it, but going back to that respect is, you know, you've got to cover every aspect of it.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's just so many more potentials out there today. And it just goes back to, you know, doing it right, covering every aspect in a pre-job and, you know, going home the same way you went to work.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And there are some utilities that are on the distribution side, the distribution underbuilt. If they're working on an underbuilt distribution, they only work site ground because the high amount of circulating currents because of the induced voltage of the transmission line that is picking up from above.
Yes.
You know, so those circulating currents can get really, really high.
Yeah.
And there again, not a big issue unless something opens up and you bridge the gap.
Yeah. And just a quick point, when you reference distribution underbuild, so for those, you know, people like myself that have only been in the substation world or the relay world and they don't understand. So what Joey's referring to is if you ever see a circuit where, let's say it's a 69 circuit, right? So there's some transmission poles with a 69 circuit. And then under that will be the distribution circuit, whether your utility's using 13 kV, 25 kV, whatever your distribution class is. But that's what he means by underbuild. So you'll have a transmission circuit and then on that same structures, you will see the distribution. But that's what Joey's referring to there with the underbuild.
Yeah, yeah, that's correct. So, and that, you know, the requirement for the work site grounding can kind of slow things up a little bit because if I've got two crews working on that same line and at two different locations and I install work site grounds at my location and they install work site grounds at their location, then we have those circulating currents back.
Yeah.
So just a thought, you know, again, going back to a couple of weeks ago with all the testing for the boom and all the testing for potential and all of that stuff. What is the common layout on the grounds? I mean, you know, you use grounds and you use them each day. You throw them back in the truck bin or whatever. What's the testing procedures on the personal grounds?
They're tested once a year.
Yep.
Once a year.
Yep.
So I don't know. I'm sitting here racking my brain, Joey, while you're thinking, and I don't want to open a whole entirely different can of worms, but I think I'm going to. And again, coming from a substation background. So when I hear EPZ, yeah, I know. I'm probably going to open the can. When I hear EPZ, here's what I visualize and what I think I know and what I think I've been taught. And that is basically where now, let's say maybe what I have a tugger, right, on the transmission line or something like that. And I actually have like grounded matting, correct, that tugger and my equipment is sitting on. So, and maybe it doesn't even have to be a four drum, a tugger. Maybe it's just the line truck in itself, right? So now is all that tied to my equipotential grounding, or is that a completely separate thing where I'm just driving ground rods and grounding the EPZ zone in which I'm standing? but that has no tie to my overhead grounds. Hey guys, let me jump in here real quick. As y'all know, we're partnering with Zach and Melinda with LimeBrothersKeeper.org, and just want to encourage y'all again to go to their page, donate to their website, and at the top of their website, you're going to see a link. It says Working with Lightning Raffle, and every $25 that you donate will put you one entry into the drawing for the grand prize. Paul, what are the grand prizes here?
Well, for the grand prize on that August the 25th drawing, which will also be Zach's burniversary.
That's right. Thank you.
So for that August the 25th, the grand prize is going to be handmade wood climbing hooks made by Zach. Has the Working with Lightning emblem on those as well. The runner-up will receive a Working with Lightning package. It's a 20-quart cooler filled with all kind of Working with Lightning items, tumblers, koozies, coasters, stuff like that. And then third place will be a standard care package from Working with Lightning. You'll have a tumbler, koozie, a coaster, and a few stickers to go along with that.
Yeah, we might throw them in a little extra.
Yeah. May throw in a few little extra things.
Little surprise.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, I just want to encourage y'all again to participate. It goes to a good cause. They are a 501c3 nonprofit organization. They're helping out our brothers and sisters in the industry at their probably most critical time of need. It's definitely a great thing to be supporting, and we're glad we can partner with them.
Absolutely.
They're really good people, and they're doing a lot to try to help us as well.
Yes.
So, yep, just wanted to cut in real quick, encourage y'all to make those donations, and you never know who you're going to be helping. It could be your coworker. All right, let's get back to the show.
It does not tie to your overhead grounds.
Really?
The only way it would tie, you got your running ground that your conductor's going through.
That's right. Yep, that's right.
That is tied to that grid, but your conductor is being pulled, and it's being pulled through grounded dollies or grounded travel, whatever you want to call them.
Mm-hmm.
Spaced out at different intervals based on what you're crossing over, how far your pull is, but you're basically, that conductor that you're pulling in is not grounded by anything other than your running ground and those grounded dollies.
All right. So again, just help me out, man. Bear with me. I'm sorry. So those grounded dollies, you're talking about the dollies actually on the structure.
Yeah.
Okay. So this, I guess, brings me back to my question. Though we're talking about differences in potential in grounding. So if I'm standing there at the tugger or wherever, a Ford drum, and I am, all right. So Joey, I guess in my head though, going back to your original, example where they were tying the two grids together and we were talking about the differences in potential, even though we're grounded. So if I'm standing on those mats, I'm grounded through the EPZ zone, which is a separate, ground rod or whatever it may be. But my conductor is being grounded through the dollies that are up on the structure. So do I still have a difference of potential from that conductor to where I'm standing right beside it on the EPZ zone?
No, because your running ground is tied to your...
Okay, so the rolling ground there, which is, just right off of it, is tied to the EPZ. So that's okay. Okay. Gosh, yeah. I hate being stupid, but hey.
Hey, and those EPZs for your tugger and your tensioner, some of them have gotten very sophisticated. Some of the, the mats that they use in the right of way,
mm-hmm.
they've actually made those to where they've got expanded metal that fits around them. And you put them together and you torque them instead of just using those little lock nuts and got the rails and everything. And it's an expensive way to go about doing it, but it's a very easy, trip hazard free kind of deal that you can deal with, because a lot of times you set that hog wire up and you need to turn the trailer just a little bit, and when you do, it buckles the hog wire,
right?
It's the EPZs have come a long way.
Yeah, I know one contractor I've seen that has those, and I know, like the plastic matting, they're a different color. The ones for their EPZ that have the conductive metal in them, they're in a different color so that they stand out. But that I did think that was pretty interesting when I saw how they had incorporated into the matting that the ability to do that.
Yeah.
Okay, so that clears up in my head as you were talking about, the equipotential and the personal ground, and I'm trying to put in my head how I do that with an EPZ as well, but now I think I got it. I think I'm ready, Paul.
And just to interject here, a little afterthought on those personal grounds being tested every year. They're tested every year, but we actually need to have a daily inspection before each use.
Yeah, the visual, no gouges, the sheeting's good, the ferrules.
Everything's in contact, everything's tight, everything's cleaned, so that I just wanted to throw that in as an afterthought. Yeah, they're tested once a year, but you actually daily inspect before every use.
So that brings me to a question, Joey. And again, I'm not asking you to refute or, you know, dispute any stuff out there. I'm genuinely curious. And that is, I forget what I was told when I first hired in. Like, let's say I'm going to ground a 795 conductor. I got to scratch it, right? Clean it up. And I think I was told you have 2 minutes before oxidation begins to degrade that connection. Is that correct?
Well, within 20 minutes, 20. It's just like been brushed.
Okay, 20. So, I mean, have you ever been part of or seen studies? I mean, is there a definitive, if I scratch that surface really good and then it takes me 20 minutes to hang that ground, I mean, do I actually lose some safety, some security net there?
Yes, sir.
Wow. That's crazy to believe that fast. Now, is it the same for copper or is that strictly aluminum?
It's more on the aluminum side. There are actually some of the standards that I've looked at actually recommend when you brush your conductor and you brush your ground clamps that you apply inhibitor.
Oh, really?
Yeah, especially if they're going to be installed and left for an extended period of time.
Yeah.
And with that 20 minutes, is that just a rule of thumb for every voltage or does that decrease with higher voltage? Does that have anything to do with it or is it just a 20-minute deal?
It's 20 minutes for aluminum.
Okay.
Nice. Yeah, I'm trying to think back. We did an episode a while back, man. Gosh, I wish I knew it right now to reference. I may have to add it to the description. But yeah, I did an episode a while back on the conductors and making, you know, I think it was on torquing and electrical connections. And that was actually one of the recommendations, which I've never done. Now, granted, that was to make a bolted electrical connection, right? Like on a four-hole paddle. Mm-hmm. But same thing applies to what Joey just said. And something, I want to say it was Alcoa. I think it was Alcoa, which, you know, they're huge in the aluminum world. Their process for torquing and bolting connections was you scrub it, you apply, like he said, inhibitor, mm-hmm. and then you actually wire brush that inhibitor in, that compound in.
Into
it. And then you apply more inhibitor and make the bolted connection. And I said, I have never in my life been taught when wire brushing to actually apply an Alnox or a Pucky, whatever name you want to use, and actually scratch that into the surface. So that's interesting. Joey just said that because I've never seen that either.
Yeah, there was when I first went on the substation side, there was an inhibitor that we used that didn't have any grid in it.
Oh, okay.
And we would put it on. It was kind of like a dark green.
Mm-hmm. Yep, I know. We call it snot.
Yeah, we'd put that on and then we would brush it until it turned gray.
Right. Okay. So then you knew you had enough aluminum particles to turn it gray, I guess, the silver.
Yeah.
Huh. Yeah, see, I was never taught that. And then to hear him mention that with just even grounding, you know, you should scrub it with some inhibitor.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Yeah, I've never done it.
Yeah, one of the other things that's there's a lot of controversy about is, especially since, you know, like Paul was talking, we have lines crossing lines. We've got parallel circuit. We've got double circuit lines that we're dealing with. And, you know, before you hang your grounds and you go to do your voltage test, how high is too high to apply the grounds to? Yeah, I mean, some companies say it's got to be less than 10%.
Oh, okay. I see what you're getting at. I was trying to figure out, what do you mean? I don't know, 200 feet? How high? Okay, I got you. Yeah, you're right. I think the utility I was working for was 10%.
Well, it is 10%. So if your voltage reading exceeds that 10% of that, yeah, you're
all stop.
All stop, and you refigure.
Yeah, see, there was a generating plant that I'm familiar with that has a test bus. And basically, if I was going to be working on a breaker, taking it out of service, I could actually keep that line tied into to a test bus. And when we isolated the test bus to clean insulators, do whatever it was we had to do, the voltage would go from 230 kV. There was so much output at that plant that it would go from 230 on the bus panel inside the control house to 300 kV.
Really?
Yeah. You talk about calling a pretty good arc when you install your grounds on that, but
right.
Yeah.
That would induce voltage there was. So, you know, sometimes those rules they're not there. You know, I mean, you would never be able to do anything.
Right.
Well, so bringing up that point, as you just, you know, what is the percentage? What is the
threshold
that you stop at?
Yeah.
How about talking a little bit about what we refer to as live, dead, live testing? So, and we know that it's different between the substation and the line because in the substation, you have normally, you still have energized equipment and bus while you're in a substation. Whereas if you're on a single circuit line out in the
20
middle,
miles away.
20 miles off the road, it's like, hey, so I know that there is a tester in your voltage checking device. But how about let's just talking about that a minute for the importance of the live, dead live, or whatever else it may be referred to, and the necessity of that.
Well, the importance of it is the fact that you know the meter's actually working.
Yes.
Yes.
And so if I go up and I put it on a line and the meter, there's some kind of defect with the meter, something's not working properly, and it doesn't show me that I have voltage, then that meter's maybe telling me a lot because the line may still be hot.
Yep.
And there are a lot of different meters that are out there. Some of them, one of them that's shaped kind of like a mushroom, you could rub it on your pants leg and it statically would let you know that it's actually picking up. Some of the other ones, you did have to have a voltage source that you could check. And a lot of controversy back and forth about, well, if I've got a distribution circuit, but I'm going to be grounding a 230 circuit, can I just prove that it's working on the distribution circuit? Well, here's where you run into it. Well, there's several of them. I'm not supposed to put anything on that line unless I've got a hotline tag.
Yeah, that's valid.
I'm not supposed to.
Yeah.
So if I do that, then I am actually violating a safety rule there because I don't have a hotline tag. But the other is you're looking at two totally different voltages.
Right.
That's been a big question over the years. You know, hey, I'm on, as Jeremy just alluded to a while ago, we're on an underbilled pole. You know, we've got transmission up top, we got distribution down below. Okay, the transmission circuit's out or supposed to be out, but you know, hey, I'm just going to drop down. I'm going to check the voltage on the distribution, make sure it's my meter's working, and then go back up. That's been a big debatable scenario for many years, actually, but you are dealing with two total different voltages.
Yeah. And I would say that that's not really a whole lot different than the meters that come with the little voltage pack.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah.
Because that's a totally different voltage that is C in there too. So as far as going from a distribution voltage where you're messing up, in my opinion, is I didn't get a hotline tag.
Right.
The voltage part doesn't make as much difference. I did test the functionality of the meter.
Right.
But you know, like you said, in a substation, sometimes it's really easy to do. Sometimes on a transmission line, you're a long way from a distribution circuit too.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really when you need the one that has your little voltage pack that you can actually apply voltage to the meter and test it.
Yeah,
because getting back to that hotline on the distribution, you know, you've got two individuals, two shotguns, two voltage testers, and you know, you're wrapping the hook around A phase and the other one's dropping it to neutral. You know, you could be compromising that distribution circuit, you know, and if you don't have the hotline on or anything like that, then yeah, there's a lot of different scenarios and a lot of different stuff that comes up with that.
Yeah. I was on a job one time where the guys were getting ready to ground, and I made them actually rush the conductor in the clamps, and they'd never heard of that before. Now, these were journeyman linemen.
Hmm. Really?
Yeah, they'd never heard of that before.
Well, I can tell you that was not a practice used in the past.
Right.
I can vouch for that.
And well, this was way at a totally different utility. And but then on a 138 circuit, the guy goes up to ground it, and he's got a 4-foot shotgun stick, and I call it all stop and bring them down and tell them you can't do that. And foreman on the crew said, I can see rounds hanging three spans where the other guys have already got those hung three spans down. I can put this one on by hand if I want to.
So if you don't mind, I think I know the answer, but what would be wrong with a 4-foot stick other than it's forcing you to encroach mat already before the ground gets applied?
Well, you get that, and if there's a ball of fire,
it's right in your face.
It's gonna be in it. Plus on transmission, the only time that I've ever seen anybody use a 4-foot stick on transmission was when, instead of using a wand to bond onto the 500, they would use an extended lead and the little card clamp to bond the basket when they're doing bare hand.
Right.
And yeah, they would use a little 4-foot shotgun for that. But that's the only time.
Yeah.
Yeah, but getting back to that, yeah, I can see those other grounds. We can just go ahead and put these on.
Yeah.
Well, number one, why are you even putting that second set up? But the rule of thumb we always used was every set of grounds is the first set you hanging.
Right.
So it don't matter matter if it's the fifth set, you're hanging that fifth set just like you're hanging the first set.
Well, yeah, and see, there's a misconception. A lot of people think, okay, in fact, I was told one time that I was grounding wrong because I wasn't grounding on the source side. And on transmission, the sources change. You know, the power flow changes constantly.
According to load.
Yeah, and where they're trying to push power to and all that stuff.
Yep.
And it doesn't matter if I've got a set of grounds hung between me and the source and the line comes hot, the whole line comes hot. It doesn't just, every bit of it doesn't get bled off into the ground where you've got it grounded. You know, that whole line comes hot. And that's what you have to keep in mind is if I'm hanging another set of grounds, then, and the line comes hot when I'm hanging them, I got to have my distance.
Yes. Yeah. Well, you may have thought there was a check valve on the dead end tower and that power only would flow one way there.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is the misunderstanding that was explained to me years ago that, you know, we're not talking about a water hose with water running through it.
Right, yeah. It's not a one-way street.
No, it's not going to start down there at the spigot and eventually come out the end of the hose. It's matter of fact, the way the one guy explained it to me, he said, imagine that full hose is already full of water. And when you introduce that little bit of water at the one end, it's pushing out the other end already, right? So, you know, that's the way... The concept is often mistaken.
Yeah. And, you know, several of the incidents that I've looked into and some of the ones that have been reported basically have to do with probably the leading cause is removing or installing the grounds incorrectly and taking the grounding clamp off first.
Mm-hmm.
People get in a hurry right at the job and it's like, all right, we get the grounds off, we can leave. And there's one utility that I'm aware of that has a policy that when you ground the transmission circuit, you actually have a driven ground going from the driven ground rod up to the first phase and then the daisy chain attic.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the fatalities that I'm aware of, they had just finished building the line and they were getting ready to go home. And one of the newer guys on the crew, the ground was still attached to the conductor. And they had made the comment, well, as soon as we can get these grounds down, we'll go home. And he walked over to that ground rod and took it off and it killed him.
Mm-hmm.
Man. You know, the order of connection is a very, very important thing.
So, yeah, I mean, grounding, there's a lot that goes into this, and I'm sure we can have multiple, you know, shows on this, and especially when you get, like, utility specific, right, with their standards and their policies.
So many different scenarios.
There is. And that's the other thing, you know, when we think about, I know we spend a lot of time on transmission line, but then you got substation, and then every substation is different. Like, you could be working on a different piece of equipment where there is or is not bus beside you or energized or dead. So yeah, it gets interesting. I'm good. Paul, do you have anything else for Joey?
No, I think we covered a lot. And like you said, still a lot out there that could be covered. But, you know, we just again appreciate it, Joey, you taking your time out to join in with us and educate us and the rest, you know. And even with some of this, you say, well, I already know that or I've done that 1,000 times. You know, again, in this industry, you know, you're always learning and refreshing.
Yep.
And so, and that's what, you know, this is about too. It's maybe not just learning, but it's refreshing. Just like, oh yeah. So, again, I know you do a lot and we appreciate you coming on and educating and refreshing. And we'll be looking forward a couple more weeks from now with the qualified rigging.
Yep.
And hopefully have you back on and be looking forward to it.
Well, I appreciate you guys having me back.
And Joey, I got to ask, do you, again, here we go, right? Definitions, qualified versus certified. Do you do qualified or certifying on rigging?
Yes.
Okay, good. Okay, that's perfect, man. And yeah, again, like Paul said, I'll just echo it real quick. We really do appreciate it. I know for me, I learn a lot. That's why I focus my questions around transmission line because I came up through substation. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean I know everything about substation, but a lot of my curiosity is around stuff in the industry that I don't know.
Yes.
BannermanTraining.com. And again, Joey's been doing this for 42 plus years and been involved in the training industry since 1998. That's a lot of training. That's a lot of people that, and you know, that's got to be rewarding, Joey, right? I mean, so you've been training since 98. How many people have you influenced and, you know, kicked their careers off in this industry? And that's pretty cool to think about. Yes. Like that's leaving your mark on the industry, you know?
Oh yeah. Yeah.
That's awesome.
I have people ask me all the time, when are you going to retire? And, you know, I just, I love seeing the light turned on when when the guys understand it, and it's like it's not really working me.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. A passion is a passion. I mean, that's really cool, man. And again, we greatly appreciate it, and look forward to talking to you about some rigging, man.
All right. Well, thanks again for having me. Look forward to the next session.
Yes, sir. We'll see you.
Thank you.
All right.
All right, Paul. What do you think, brother?
I think Joey's been through a lot.
He has.
Yeah.
He has.
And just in the training, I mean, 26 years, you know, or.
Yeah.
Yeah, 98, 26 yeah, 98. Years.
So. Yeah. So 2000 would have been 24 plus yep. two more.
That's it. I mean, 26 years of just training. So.
Yeah, I'm 36 years old.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And then on top of that, the other, I guess, the other half or so close to it, you know, actually in the field working. So,
absolutely. Line in. So.
You know, yep. So he's, again, appreciate his input and refreshing on a lot of that, education on some of it. And, you know, I'm kind of already looking forward to what he's going to have in a couple of weeks.
Oh, I am too. And I know rigging can get deep. Like it becomes a trigonometry game, yes. right? You're calculating angles, line of pull.
Yes.
Yeah. It becomes trigonometry real quick. It's not as easy as just it can be, right? But really, we take for granted we just grab a 20-ton sling and a 10-ton shackle and
exactly.
let it rip. But do we really know? Is that right?
Yeah.
You know?
But, well, there again, just like that sling, you know, it's just as critical as that ground.
Sure.
And
sure.
there's inspections and there's testing and there, you know, again, it's just kind of keep saying it, but it's even down to that shackle and that sling. You got to respect it, you know, because you go to lift a bank off of a, you know, low boy and
right.
you don't have the right sling. I mean, bad things are going to happen.
Quick. And again, I know we were talking off the air earlier, but again, my substation background, right? So I know you've done distribution. You've done even underground work.
Yes.
And I know I was asking you questions. So maybe that's another, because we have been doing a lot more with distribution. We had Brent on. We had Christina on. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we've been dabbling more in the distribution world.
Yes.
And I'm definitely going to look forward to maybe even just an underground episode.
Yeah.
And we dabble in underground. I know we have a few substations with the one utility that uses a few pad mounts and some underground for like some backup station service and stuff like that. So, I mean, I've been inside of them. I've seen them. But I'm not by any means pretending like I'm the underground expert.
Well, we have, and I just worked on two development projects between two stations.
Right.
That actually has a 115 underground transmission circuit running from one station to the other.
Yeah.
And we've got to go in, and the terminators are old, and
right.
some of them are weepy and seeping. And we've got to go in, and we've got to change the terminators out. And the conduit between the two stations are oil filled.
So I was going to tell you that. It's been a long time, but I was working down in like the St. Pete area. And yes, we had some underground, I don't remember if it was 115 or 230, but yeah, underground transmission and same thing. There was actually like a pump house
yes.
at one end of the substation.
Exactly.
And it circulated that coolant, that oil through the conduits. And I mind blown. And I was probably, I don't even remember how long ago that was. I would say it was 16 years ago. I was probably a third step apprentice. So I was trying to figure out how to operate a man lift. I wasn't trying to figure out how the underground currents were working with oil being, you know, pumped from end to end.
Yeah. And what's cool about this is this was maybe 2 months ago. We were down there starting this development and everything else. You're not going to drain 20 miles of oil, right? So what they do is they come in and take liquid nitrogen and freeze that oil just below the terminators.
Right.
And then they can change the terminators out, put the new.
Oh, and then the oil isn't flowing.
The oil froze with the liquid nitrogen.
God, that makes sense.
And then.
That's so smart.
As soon as you get it all hooked back up, then you take the liquid nitrogen off and the oil's back to flowing.
No
so
way.
That's pretty cool.
I was sitting there thinking while you're talking, I think I've seen that in Virginia as well. However, we were actually building a new addition to a solar field in Virginia. But if I remember right, across the substation, I did see some more underground and I saw that same like piping.
Yes.
And I saw a house, which I assume was like the pump house because it definitely wasn't the control house.
Yes.
I think I've seen it twice, but I can't confirm in Virginia, but it had all the signs. You know what I mean? It had all the right signs. And I remember when I was working there, I worked there twice, actually. I went there, left, and then came back like 2 weeks later. And I always meant to walk over there and be a little nosy, but I never did.
Well, this one is, I mean, I was in the development of this, you know, getting the whole process, and it's one of them that I may just have to go watch the execution on this.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's going to be pretty neat. I've never personally experienced that. that,
right.
seen it done. So that may be one of those that I follow up with all the way through the end.
You're going to have to get some working with Lightning Photos for us, man.
Oh, yes. There we go.
Get some working with Lightning Photos.
Get me a Tumblr or two, and I'll have them down there.
There you go. All right, everybody, as always, we appreciate your time. We appreciate your support. If you got any questions, comments, concerns, email us. You know, reach out on Facebook, on Messenger, whatever you want to do. We love the engagement. We appreciate the engagement. And Paul, I'm good. Any final words? You good?
Nope, I'm good. Just glad to have everybody tuning in, and y'all just keep it safe.
That's right. Here we go.
Hey, guys, don't forget about the Tennessee Valley Rodeo that is coming up in Chattanooga, Tennessee. It'll be June the 7th and 8th. Jeremy, fill us in a little bit on that.
Yeah, so the Tennessee Valley Rodeo, Lion Brothers Keeper is going to be there again. So Zach and Melinda are going to have a booth set up. And y'all be sure to go by, again, talk to them, hang out with them. Definitely, if you can, donate, help their organization out. All you're doing is helping brothers and sisters in our industry out anyway. And they're also going to have a lot of our Working with Lightning swag. Again, they're going to have some coasters, some koozies, and a bunch of hard hat stickers.
And so, be sure to let them know that you heard about this on Working with Lightning.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's a great organization, great people, and I appreciate them helping spread the word for us.
Absolutely. It's a good team.
That's right. All right, let's do it.
Hey, everyone. Thank you for listening. And we welcome you to tune in next time. We really do appreciate you and would like to encourage you to support and sponsor our podcast. Be sure to check us out on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, and email us at workingwithlightning@gmail.com. Y'all be safe.